Here's a question. A survey was taken of 511 people, and they were asked, what kind of conversion did you have? You know, was it sort of radical, sort of, you know, you went from red to green, black to white, overnight, in an instant, you know, it just happened, you had one of those kind of conversions to Christ? Or did you have, and this is the second question that was asked of these survey people, or did you have the kind of conversion that took a long time, you were brought up in a Christian home, you somehow found yourself in it. It evolved incrementally, step by step, over a long process. There's no date, no time. There was no kind of big, marked experience. It just sort of occurred. I mean, it, you know, you just sort of morphed into it, moved into it, and you just sort of grew up into it. Where do you belong? Tell the person next to you again. Have we got the heaters on? Well, okay, here's the second question. What do you think the percentages were of the 511? What percentage do you think said of themselves that their conversion to Christ was like in an instant? They can remember the date and the time. It was radical. It was dramatic. It, you know, they went from red to green. What percentage of the 511? Or do you think it was, you know, 50% or 60% or 5%? Anybody? 16. Big 5. Anyone else? 16? 60. Anyone else? Beg your pardon? 20. Yeah, it was in and around about 20 to 30% of the survey. Let's try it out in this room. Of those who would say that, you know, you kind of, you grew up, you sort of grew into, you can't really pinpoint a time, a space, a person, you just found yourself in, and it happened over a long period of time. Could you stand? Okay, thank you. You could see. For those it was like from, you know, red to green in an instant, you know there's a turning point, it was dramatic, stand up. Ah, so it's, what do you reckon, 50-50? Around about 50. I thought we were balanced. Okay, 50-50. In this survey, it was two-thirds were the just evolved into it, and about one-third dramatic. So our topic this morning is really in and around conversion. If you have your Bibles, which book have we been going through for too long now? Acts, yeah. Could you come with me to Acts 22? I hope to only speak for about 5 minutes, 7 minutes. I know I've said this before. Joe, would you like a glass of water? Oh, you've got water, yeah. No, you can stay. It's a nice cough, really. I just wondered if we could get her a glass of water, that was all. Here we go. Chapter 22, let me read. Brothers and sisters, and this is Paul speaking, listen now to my defense, because he's being charged with all sorts of things, and he's standing in front of a crowd, and he wants to speak to the crowd who are threatening him. And he says, when they heard him speak to them in Aramaic, they became very, very quiet. Then Paul said, look, I'm a Jew. That's interesting. He says, I am a Jew. He's writing as a follower of Christ, but he's saying, I'm a Jew. It's very interesting. He says, I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in the city. And under Gamaliel, I was thoroughly trained in the law of my fathers and was just as zealous for God as any of you are today. I persecuted the followers of this way, and talking about the Christians there, to their death, arresting both men and women and throwing them into prison, as also the high priest and the council can testify. I even obtained letters from them to their brothers in Damascus and went there to bring these people as prisoners to Jerusalem to be punished. So he was on the hunt for Christians. He wanted to do them in. He wanted them out of the way. He thought that they were thwarting the purposes of God for Israel. This is not random violence here. He actually thought they were thwarting God's purposes. And he was doing this in a former life. And then he says, about noon, so he could recognize the time, as I came near Damascus, suddenly a bright light from heaven flashed around me. That really has to do, and if you read Corinthians, it has to do with an actual appearance, not just a vision, but an actual appearance of Jesus. So it's not just a vision of Jesus, but the actual appearance of Jesus. And he fell to the ground. Now, some painters have Paul on a horse. He was never on a horse. He was walking, and he just fell to the ground. And he heard a voice say to me, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Interesting that, isn't it? He was persecuting a group, and Jesus says, why do you persecute me? In other words, Jesus and his church are so intimately tied together. You touch one, you touch the other. Who are you, Lord? I asked. I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting, he replied. My companions saw the light, but they did not understand the voice of him who was speaking to me. So this is Paul speaking again. What shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said, get up and go to Damascus. There you'll be told all that you have been assigned to do. In other words, at the heart of Paul's conversion, there was also this kind of call. There was a call to align his life with the purposes of God for this planet and its people. It's not just going to heaven. There was a call dimension. I have a task for you to do. My companions led me by the hand into Damascus, verse 11, because the brilliance of the light had blinded me. Now, we've touched on some of this in the previous 3 years. So, let me talk about this very briefly, because I would love some of you, my dear friends, to come up the front soon. And in a very, 1 minute, 2 minute type deal, share your conversion story. And by the way, in this group of people here, we often have proud Peters and humble Heathers. Do you know what I'm talking about? The proud Peters sit back and they say, I'm never going up front. I'm not going up. Those are proud Peters. And the humble Heathers, they're the type of people who say, I've got nothing to say. No one would want to listen to me. What I want to encourage the proud Peters to do is come up and share your story. And the humble Heathers, what you have to say is very important. Are you with me? Everybody here in this room has a story. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I love stories. Who here loves to just sit with someone for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and just listen to their story? I do. I can't think of anything better in life to do than just sit with someone and hear their story. And I love listening to your stories. Do you believe me? I do. I love hearing people's stories. And I also love listening to conversion stories. Now, not the only kind of story that I like listening to, but they are a type of story that I warm to. At times, there is a particular conversion story that I have told amongst us over these last 3 years. I think I've shared it twice. I would like the story to stick here. See if you can remember this. There was a young guy, went to school, went to university, nailed all of his exams, top of the class, he was bright. When he left university, he had this kind of ambition to become a best-selling author, writer. But instead, he fell to the bottom of the heap, figuratively, and he ended up being a proofreader of chemistry textbooks. Now, if that's your job here, that's great. But that's where he ended up. And his kind of dreams became nightmares littered on the floorboards of his office. And he was stuck in a concrete jungle of a type of an office, way in the corner. Now, as the months and the years rolled by, can you remember the story? As the months and the years rolled by, there was a certain guy in the concrete jungle where he worked who was a Christian. His name was Ed. And Ed got alongside Eric. This alongside a theme that we're currently doing in our evenings and how to do that. And so Ed got alongside Eric. They became alongsiders. Not necessarily friends, but just kind of, they just got alongside each other. They looked out for each other. They did some things together in life, that kind of thing. And then one day, as Ed was passing by the office of Eric, his whole jaw had dropped. He was, looked tired and miserable, sad and depressed. And he informed Ed that a dear family member was now in a coma. So Ed said to Eric, "I'll pray for that uncle." And the weeks went by, and then his friend Eric, this guy that is getting alongside, was still kind of struggling with it all. And then Ed said, the Christian said to this guy, "Let's pray. And I'm going to invite you now to pray with me." And this guy was not a Christian. And they sat together in that office, and Ed prayed. And as Ed prayed for the uncle, something happened in Eric. And Eric became a Christian. This is what God does. God showed up, and Eric became a Christian. And today, Eric is a best-selling author. I've got a couple of his books. I mean, it's just a wonderful story. Did you like that? I mean, my story is fantastic. No, but it is. I mean, I think we've got to fall in love with our own stories in a healthy sort of way. I was brought up in an irreligious home, nothing to do with God whatsoever. And then in my last year of school, something devastatingly painful happened in my life, and it flipped me into search mode, and I got involved in Eastern mysticism, the occult, became a Class A user and a dealer of drugs and so forth and so on. And to cut a very long story short, ended up in Christchurch, where this stranger, this Christian by the name of Graham, he asked where I lived. I said that I just lived anywhere, gate crashed anywhere, no fixed abode, and he ended up giving me his bedroom and having the rent paid for weeks and months ahead. And as I walked into this bedroom, there was a coffee table, and on the coffee table there was a Bible. And it was the second time in my life that I bumped into this book. I opened it, and I saw someone, not something. And who's not to like what I saw? I liked him. And I thought to my life, who's not to want to do life with this someone? It's a great story. But every story's different. Have you noticed that there are 100 gates into the life of a church? In other words, everybody comes through in a different way. I mean, I read this last week as I was, shifting and loading and so forth and so on and trying to put up with Ruby, as we were shifting and loading. But I read this story about this guy called Bob Brewster. And Bob, his wife suddenly left him, just suddenly left him. And he had two little daughters. And he didn't like doing life alone. And some of his friends were Christians, and they were going to this particular church. So Bob, with his two little girls, one Sunday, rocks up to this church. And
They park their bums in the back row. You know, churches are churches, scary places. So they park their skin bags, that's a bit more polite, in the back row. About 3 or 4 months later, Bob and his two girls have moved probably where Pam and Paul are seating now, but just about there. They've just moved up. After a year, he's sort of like an assistant in the Sunday school. Several months later, he comes to the pastor and he says, "I'd like to be baptized." And of course, the pastor says to him, tell me about your story of coming to Christ. And he said, "Oh, for me, the most important thing was I needed to be loved by a group of people before I was prepared to be loved by God." And he said, "Here, I've been loved by a group of people. And then I discovered that God loved me through that." That was his gate. So what about you? What about your great story? Now, here's the thing. Those people that have been brought up in a Christian home and have somehow just kind of evolved into it, often they say to me, "I don't have a story." "Oh, Mick, you have a story." "But I don't have a story. I mean, I only wish I had your story, Mick. I mean, my story is boring in comparison to yours." And so second generation Christians often think they don't have a story. Can you relate to that? Or can you understand that? Oh, please give me some feedback, people. Can you appreciate that? Yeah, thank you. That's way better. All the switches were off there for a minute. What I want to say, and from the bottom of my heart, is that if you are a second-generation Christian and you've been brought up in a Christian home, you have a big story. Because second-generation Christians, they have made a radical shift. Because with second-generation Christians, you see, for them, often their security was tied up in the family home. And often their identity was tied up in their family. And often their loyalty was to their parents. But with a second generation Christian, what they have done is that they have transferred their security from their home to Christ. They have transferred their identity from their family to Christ. And they have transferred and shifted their loyalty from their parents to Christ. Now, if that is not a big story, I don't know what is. So everybody in this room has a big story. Paul had a big story. By the way, with Paul, it wasn't that he abandoned one religion and went to another. Do you know what occurred with Paul? He was a believer in God, and he continued to believe in that God. It's just that. I mean, he was brought up in this stuff like a second generation Christian. It was just that he received a fuller revelation of what he had always believed. That second generation Christian stuff. Now Paul, to finish, he loved to tell his story. You couldn't get him to shut up. There are numerous accounts in the Newer Testament where he is just sharing biographically, autobiographically, sharing his story, his big story. I've had the privilege of sharing my story 100, 1,000 times, no exaggeration. And every time I tell my story, I just love it. I'm so excited. Now, there's something about telling your story over and over and over and over again. So, Who would like to come to the front? Now, to warm us up for 30 seconds, turn to the person next to you and tell them just one detail about your conversion story. And if there are some here this morning and you are not yet Christ followers, we would love to hear your story. And we value your story. Are you with me? So, turn to the person next to you. James, I'll take the other. Just in case. No, no one's teed up. It's cold, eh? Oh, you're going to come up, are you? Hold on. Okay, friends. So, Phil, who led us so ably in worship before, and we're going to have Phil up again, he has been on my back. He said, come on, Mick, we've got it. We need more and more time for testimonies. And he's right. And so he did text me earlier this week, and I said, well, mate, I beat you to the gun because I had this planned. But I just think there is real value in us sharing our stories, even if you've shared it a million times before. My word to the proud Peters is we'd love to hear your story. But don't come up here and say you're a proud Peter, okay? And for the humble heathens, we want to hear your stories too. Anybody's story, okay? So, who would like to be first? Would you like to do this morning? Are the switches off again? Would you like to do it? Oh my goodness. Here we go. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh no, up here,
okay.
Yeah.
There isn't. Okay, thanks. I came to the Lord as a child. And it really was because I didn't want to miss out. Again, I kept one eye open when the Sunday school teacher said, put your hand up if you want to give your life to Jesus. And it just seemed I was in the minority. It meant something to me. It was a moment. I know where I was. I can see the location behind the church where the Sunday school met. But I think, you know, you learn about what God is like and what God will do, and for me I didn't see a lot of it, but I remember there was a time when I was writing a final examination for radiotherapy. I was a third year student, and everything went wrong in my life. And I remember sitting there, and you know when you've probably had experiences when you've been in an exam. And you look around, everybody's writing except you. You know, that incredible panic. And I remember sitting there panicking, and I said, God, now, this is what's happening in my life. My mother is in hospital. She could die. My sister's had a baby. Everything is going wrong. I couldn't study as much as I should have. And I expect you to do some of the stuff that I heard that you do. I remember sitting there. And I closed my eyes as I prayed, and suddenly there was a textbook. The textbook was open exactly to the place where today I know the question. The question it was such an incredible moment. And I remember there it was, on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side of the page. And I started writing. It was just verbatim, just absolutely what I saw. I wrote down in my exam. Closed my eyes again, wrote some stuff, looked, wrote, looked, wrote, did the diagram. And, I mean, anybody would think I was cheating. But, you know, for me, God showed me that he is who he said he is. And he will do what he said he would do. And that's been my experience. And I probably have to go.
Thanks, Dawn. So we're going to just keep it rolling. So more and more people. Come on, guys. We want to get through most of us. Thanks, Lois.
I became a Christian when I was 10. I was brought up in a Christian family. I was the youngest of seven children. And I always wanted to become a Christian and be like my family. But I thought there was something I had to do. And when I was 10, I was at an Easter camp. It was not a children's camp. It was an adult camp. And Robert Laidlaw was a speaker. He was the founder of Farmers, for you younger people. And I remember I just felt convicted, and I walked up the front when he said, you know, anyone that would, who wants to give their life to Jesus. And I prayed at that time with somebody, and I received Jesus into my life, and it did change me. You know, at 10, people say, oh, children don't understand, but it changed my life, and I read my Bible every day, and I really, really, you know, could see that difference in my life.
Oh, you're next. Okay,
Zoe,
Stephanie.
I'm up the front with Zoe.
Is that on? Hey, give it to me. Thanks.
Seeing as I'm up the front yet again with Zoe, I was brought up in a religious home, a Catholic home, and we were made to go to church and all of that stuff. And then when I was about 18, I was in a Christian community, and they had this Monday night worship meeting. And I was like, whoa, this was just something completely different to what I had experienced. And I thought, I want to get to know this person. And I don't remember specifically, but I remember this lady taking me downstairs. And in an instant, I gave my heart to the Lord. And the next night, I was baptized in the middle of winter in Oriental Bay. And I haven't looked back.
Keep it coming, guys. Yeah, Suzanne. Thanks. Stand on the thing there. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Suzanne. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous. 20-odd years ago, I was boarding with a family for about 6 months, and they were praying hard out for me to become a Christian, and I totally wasn't interested at all. They invited me to church, and I never went. I don't think I ever did. And then I was going to go down to university, and I went home for a month because I'd been out of home for a whole year. I'd been flatting for 6 months and then boarding for 6 months with this Christian family. And in that time at home for that month, they'd missed me and said to come back for a weekend, and I'm shaking like anything. and I went back for one night. Stop shaking. And that one night that I was there, the following morning, a particular incident happened, actually to me, without going into details, but anyway, the witness of this family that I was with, to me, was pretty powerful. I didn't see that their God was a religion, it was a relationship, and the forgiveness that happened, that I could see with this family from what happened to me, was truly amazing. And so his grace and his unconditional love, because I was, my family, there was no forgiveness, still to this day, actually. So, just God's forgiveness and his unconditional love. I gave my heart to Jesus that weekend, and then the following weekend, I got baptized and never looked back.
Thank you. Yeah, Cam. Go, bro.
I thought I'd better stand up just so people know that me and actually become Christians too. Mine's pretty simple. I grew up in a Christian home, one of seven kids, and both of my parents were Sunday school teachers and did Bible in school, so we were known as a Christian family. But as a four-year-old going to church, coming from that family, I sort of, you know, knew the experience of God but never quite felt good enough. I always doubted, am I going to be good enough to get to heaven? And then I remember one day out in the garden with Mum, and she talked about heaven and looking forward to going to heaven, and I sort of said to her, well, how do we really know that we're going to get to heaven? You know, how can we, what if I'm not good enough? And she then went into the salvation story, how Jesus loved us and he died for our sins, and, you know, if we come to him in simple faith and believe in him, you know, and accept him into our heart, then he'll come into our heart and he'll save us and we'll be with him forever. And I don't know, as a kid that somehow sort of clicked and made sense, and I went inside and went to the throne room of all places, and the toilet, and I was sitting there, and I remember saying to God, God, I don't get all this, but Jesus, if this is really true and that you really love me and you did all these things for me, then I'm asking you to go into my heart and to save me and be my Savior. But if it isn't, if it's wrong or whatever, then I believe in you, and I believe that one day you'll show me the truth. And from that point on, I sort of went from religious hope to faith in a living Jesus, and sort of that's how it all started for me.
It's great. More than one guy. I was just sort of thinking my story is in sort of three parts, because when I was about 10 years old, went to an open air campaigners thing that they did at the school, and they had this ventriloquist guy there called Mr. Bacon. He was cool, and he had this ventriloquist, and this ventriloquist doll used to tell us all about Jesus and these stories and all the rest of it. It was really cool. And then there was a follow-up thing that the local Baptist church did, and that was pretty cool as well, because you got free chocolate, and as everyone knows, chocolate and salvation do go well together. So I was hearing more and more about this Jesus, and I wanted to know more, but there was something deep inside that told me this is for real. There is something there, but I still wasn't quite there yet. And Anyway, I sort of did that until I got to high school, and then, you know, you didn't want to be that guy, the Christian at school, so I actually wandered away and did that for quite a few years. It was interesting then, all the way through, I see God as like this father figure with me. Yeah, our little kids run away from mum and dad, you know, they want to go and do their own thing. Hey, I'm going to go and you grab them by the scruff of the neck or the belt and just sort of pull them back. Well, that's what God was doing with me all through my life, that I'd go away off and experience the stuff, and he'd go, it's fine, I'll come back here. And he kept pulling me back, and I'd get these reality checks. The second part of my journey was a guy named Ken Holman, and I worked with this guy, and we lovingly called him Ken the Baptist. He was the most on fire Christian man that I could have met, and the perfect person to be around me at that time. And every week without fail, Ken would come to me, hey Mike, you're going to come to church? You're going to come to church? I said, nah, don't want to do that. He says, come on, I'll let you play drums. I said, nah, I'm not playing drums in your church, no way. I like heavy metal. Oh no, you can play, you know, Alice Cooper songs and that, they won't know, they just love to have you there. So anyway, you'll never get me drumming in church. And so anyway, Ken was, you know, one of these guys, but it was just his faith and his just persistence. And he's like one of those bouncy things that you punch and they fall over and they push back up. And we used to do some real nasty stuff to this guy and that. But he just showed me compassion and grace and all the rest of it. And he told me that he was going to keep praying for me, which I believe he's probably done. So I'm looking forward to when we meet again. Wherever, so I can sort of say, well, you know, your persistence did pay off. And then the third part was many years later, again I wandered off. And then again, God grabbed me by the belt. Or he was a bit higher then because I was this high. And we'd just had our kids. And these beautiful, perfect little babies were given to us by this loving father. And that was the time he said to me, "Mike, it's time to stop walking away. It's time to come home." And this was a real, real moment. And he, it was interesting because I really felt that urge that I needed to talk to him more. So, I mean, I'd always prayed, but it was always just sort of, "Well, if you're there." But this time I knew he was there. And the real conversion moment for me was shortly after, I think, Gabby was born. And we were gone to bed, and I woke up bolt upright in the middle of the night. And I just knew I had to pray. And I said to God, "Lord, you know I've been shown over the years how to make this prayer and how to do the whole thing." And I said, "Lord, can you just show me the areas of my life I need to change and the things that I've done wrong that I need to repent for?" And boy, did I not expect what came after that. It was just like flashes of images of things that had gone on in my life, things that I'd done to people, all of this stuff. And it was getting to the point where I knew I had to get out of bed, and I went into our living room, and I just got on my knees and just prayed and just said, "Lord, you got to forgive me for all this stuff." And there was a real physical sense of warmth and light and burden lifted and all the rest of the stuff that you hear people talking about. And that was the moment I knew I was home and that he was there with me. And we've had a pretty good relationship ever since then. It's been awesome. So it's a journey and it's still going.
Thanks. Now we've got to hear from 30s, people in their 30s. No, Pauline, this is after you. But we want right across the age spectrum, you know, yeah. 20s, teenagers, come on, guys.
Well, I'll come up after Mike. That night he's referring to, after he'd had this wonderful Jesus moment in our lounge room, he then rushed into our room, woke me up and said, it's okay, I can die now. You what? It's okay, I can die now. What do you mean you can die now? I'm still half asleep. I've seen Jesus. So that was a really beautiful, special moment. For me, I was brought up in a Catholic home by parents that absolutely loved God and really taught me how to pray. Get emotional. I don't remember being brought up as a Mary worshipper at all. But I suppose, must be, but we didn't actually focus on that. I actually don't remember not knowing God. I don't have a time when I didn't know God. I definitely have a time, and that doesn't mean to say my life has been a picnic, because it hasn't. That's maybe for another day. But, I've always known. I've always prayed. And, it's been a good journey.
It's great. Good on your Reesh. Good on your mate. Go for it.
As a teenager, I felt a real hopelessness about life. I just kind of got to a point where I figured life was nothing more than, I thought that we were just bags of DNA, just driven to survive by our evolution, and kind of felt a real hopelessness. And I tagged along to a Bible study one night, and they were studying a book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes, and I really related to this guy who's just felt like there was no hope to life and no reason to life, and it really sparked interest. And it's not the whole story, but it's just one little part of the story.
Yeah, thanks, Reesh.
Thanks, David. Good on you.
Hi, I'm David. I also was brought up in a Christian home. Dad was a minister, a Presbyterian minister, and I can sort of, I remember when I was four, sitting on the waterbed with Mum and asking Jesus into my life. But it's kind of it's an ongoing story. There's not really one particular turning point, I guess, but, you know, like others have said, you know, sort of drift away and then come back again, but sort of drift away, and then every few years or so, or quicker, you know, there'd be something that happened, or there'd just be a particular friend that would crop up and just encourage me back to church, or that sort of thing. I mean, my family have always been there as well, but often it sort of takes just something to click and sort of draw you back in again. And so, you know, there's times that through secondary school, where I was going to church regularly and then drift away, and then sort of at uni I got involved with the Christian group there and I kind of came back to it and then drifted away again, and then just sort of ended up through friends and that sort of stuff came back again. So it's an ongoing journey.
Thanks, David. Oh, Willem.
If you've ever, excuse me, had a bit of cold over this week, have you ever worked late at night? Often what happens is you get in the car and you're generally tired, and you start the car and you drive home. And what happens when you get home at the end of the night is you don't really realize, you don't remember the journey because you're very, very tired. Who's had that happen before? Yes. So that's kind of like how my story went. So what happened is I had some mates, they were running a camp, they were part of a crew here that was running a camp in the Coromandel, and they invited me along. And I remember going along that night, and that really just changed my life. You know, I remember kind of sitting on the pier as I was due to go back to where we were staying that night, and I remember thinking, man, this changes everything. And over the course of that year, a lot happened. To be honest, I don't really know. I can't really remember what actually happened over the course of that year, but I changed a lot. And the initial change occurred in my life, and it was like Christmas time, around that sort of time, New Year's, and then the following New Year's, I was on the same camp with that crew, ministering to others. So that's kind of how my journey went.
That's great. Thanks, Julia. Yeah.
Did any of you guys see a documentary on TV recently called Gloria Vale? Okay. I'm from there. Very interesting place. My mum was brought up in a strict Anglican upbringing, and my dad, I don't think he had any religious, and he became converted at one of a Pentecostal rally in the South Island, and was one of the founding people of that place. And who was the name of the guy that helped you? Well, was part of your
Graham.
Oh, no. I thought it was Ray Comfort. No.
Oh yeah, and Ray.
Ray Comfort helped us escape Gloria Vale.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In the middle of the night. And it was all quite exciting. I was 10. How it worked in there for us was, I have always known about God and always loved God and never really questioned anything. And I loved it. And our whole life down there was based on it, based on God and who he was. And I had a great understanding and knowledge. We had to memorize chapters of the Bible. But when we left, it was quiet. You know, escaped in the middle of the night, all that kind of stuff. Long story why. But I never really questioned. Like, when we left, we got hounded by letters by people down there saying our salvation was now in question. We knew all about hell. We knew all about the end of the world. We were made to watch footage about it all. But I never questioned, and I don't know why, but I can only put it down to my parents' faith. And they kept us, all of us kids. There were 7 children at that time. 2 more came. All of us really grounded in our faith, and I thank God hugely for them, because lots of people I know who have left since then do struggle with thinking they're still saved, but we didn't. But it wasn't until I went to a Christian camp up here in Auckland when I was about 12, I think, when for the first time I heard that it could actually be my choice to be a Christian, not just part of life and how it was. And I freaked out a little bit, and I thought, oh, I never did that, I never chose. So even though I still had this love for God and everything like that, I never Never doubted that. I walked by myself. I would detour back to my cabin at this Christian camp I was at and stopped and quickly said this prayer that I'd learned about for the first time ever. And also where I learned that it was actually more about a relationship with God and with Jesus as opposed to just knowledge, you know, head knowledge about it. But the whole time, I truly, genuinely loved God, never questioned it, never doubted him, never doubted his existence or my love for him and his life, I guess. So a little bit weird, different to possibly most of you guys, but cool.
No, thank you. Excellent, yeah. So we'll do this again. Was that good? That's very good. So so if there are many different gates into a house like this, and I just wanted to really encourage second-generation Christians, actually, this morning, personally. I look at your stories and am envious of your stories. And I absolutely mean that. Next Sunday morning, I want to talk about stalled Christians. So that's next Sunday morning, when we stall. Okay? Because that's a reality. So that's next Sunday morning. So I think it's appropriate if we have the team up, Phil, and let's sing Amazing Grace, shall we? It's just to finish our service, Amazing Grace. And we must get these heaters looked at. Who's cold? Yeah, was it just me? Yeah.